You've tuned into a podcast with me, Anupama Chopra. I do hope you enjoy listening to this conversation.
It hit me when I heard Koi Mil Gaya. When I heard the idea, I felt like home. I felt I'm understanding what I'm about now. You know, I need a DNA match. I was quite embarrassed because a lot of people I admire, respect, would kind of like make fun of the fact that I am so crazy about, you know, method and, you know, pagal ho gaya hai. When I was crying as Rohit, there was a certain voice that came out, and that became a bit of that became Rohit's normal voice.
I think it's so lovely to have you back on Film Companion.
It is an absolute pleasure.
It's been too many years.
It's always amazing talking with you.
And I'm especially thrilled because we're here to celebrate 20 years of Koi Mil Gaya.
Right. Wow. Yeah, 20 years.
You know, as I rewatched the film, I was really struck by how much the emotion still lands.
Yeah? That's nice to know.
No, it really does. Yeah, yeah. Okay, maybe the conversation around what is normal, what is not normal hasn't aged so well. Yeah, yeah. But the sincerity, the innocence of Rohit, all of that still connects and you still are rooting for him in that damn basketball game. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. How do you feel when you see it now?
So I also caught it very recently. I do remember, and I know that I've lived with this film since it was released, and it really was aging really well up until I saw it with my kids very, very recently now.
Kids are a great perspective.
Oh my God, yeah. Amazing, absolutely amazing. And I didn't even need to hear, you know, what their feedback was, because just looking at the film from that filter while sitting with them and watching the film, I realized how much our cinema has evolved, how much our, the expression, our interpretation, expression, how much the audience's focus on the nuances, all of that has emerged so beautifully in the past few years. Thanks to, you know, all the content of the world being available to almost everybody now. So everyone's getting a little bit more educated and et cetera, et cetera. But I, to be honest, I was a little brokenhearted that, you know, I felt like I was good. But if I would do the film now, oh my God, I would have not needed to do so much. I was so afraid at that time that the audience will not get my exact thought. You know, they will not be, I want them to understand every single thought of mine. So if I'm angry, but there's dignity, I want that to come through in my eyes. I want them to not miss anything. So there was that fear. Today that fear is not there because the audience, you know, understands. They're all so, they've done so much, all of us, also through the pandemic. There's so much introspection, there's so much talk on social media about mental health and about how much awareness we all have about ourselves, about each other, about relationships, about marriage, about everything. So today you would not need to do so much.
But you're being unfair on yourself. It was a different time.
Yeah, but it's also good. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I am extremely, extremely proud of the film.
You
because
should be.
I saw tears in my kids' eyes. So you're right, you know, the emotion lands, and that's the beauty of the film. And I think I walked a very fine line. Today when I see the film, I think, you know, it a little bit more and it would have not lasted. But it's just on that line.
It
and
is.
It's just on that. It's a very fine line. It's just on the line. And I'm like, oh, bach gaye. You know, but it was amazing. It was amazing to realize that, you know, how we all grow, you know, how much the cinema has grown. It's so relieving, you know, as actors, you really can just be, you know, and just feel and not be afraid.
But, you know, Ritik, I want to say that, sure, we've all grown as an audience, as artists, but look at the conviction that your father had 20 years ago.
Absolutely.
Okay. I mean, here's, you know, we speak now about conviction, right? We talk about S.S. Rajamouli's incredible conviction in RRR or what Sanjay Leela Bhansali does, you know, absolutely creating these incredible worlds. Look at the conviction this man had 20 years ago. He goes to LA to get technicians. He goes to Australia to get this jadoo. Okay. And he's making a science fiction musical.
Yeah, with an action hero up until that time who was doing action films and not doing so well because a lot of my films had failed at the box office.
Exactly.
And then he's taking this star who has been giving, you know, flops and turning him into a mentally challenged character in his film where he's betting everything on.
Where did he get this courage?
I think when he got the idea, when the idea emerged, I think what bolstered was my incredibly superlative reaction to it. I was so excited that I was going to get a chance to play this character. I could just feel that there was something waiting to explode. I could just feel that. And I think that kind of like gave him a humongous push at that point of time. Until, of course, you know, the outside world started infiltrating that solid thought and gave him a worldview of how it's going to be. Hey, you know, this guy's an action hero. You're turning him into a mentally challenged kid. You're making a sci-fi film. There's jadoo. There's a spaceship. You know, it's too risky. And at this point of time, your son should come back as an action hero. So a lot of that was happening. And he hit a breaking point. And he said, nahi banate.
Doubts came in.
Came in fully. And he said, let's not.
Phir?
Then I remember, I don't know the chronology of how or the geography, but I remember talking to his very good friend and colleague, Anil Kapoor. So Mr. Anil Kapoor was there and I love him. He loves me. So I went and I begged him. First, I asked him what he thought of this concept that Dad was now rejecting. He said he absolutely loved it. I said, oh, then this is my chance internally, I'm saying. Begging him to, you know, convince my dad to make this. And I think he could see it in my eyes. He could see the sense of loss and how heartbreaking it would have been if he had not, he would not make this. And I think he had a conversation with my dad and I entered that conversation. And within that conversation, I saw my dad's eyes light up. You know, something lit up inside him. And when he takes a decision, then I can tell when it is unbreakable.
So the switch flips and that's it.
So now he had lived through the risks. He had lived through the possibilities of, you know, failure. And then when he said, chalo, let's do it. Then I knew that now it's unbreakable.
That's an amazing story. So Anil Kapoor played a pivotal role
he
in
Kolkata. He played a pivotal role. Yes, yes, absolutely.
But Hrithik, let's go to you, right? Okay, you're convinced, you're a sci-fi fan, you love this idea from get-go.
Totally.
But look at where you were, right? You have the, you know, debut of the decade with Kauna Pyare. Then all these films underperform. Just before this film, you have Main Prem Ki Deewani, which is one of the few times you've been criticized.
Yeah.
Right? You got hell for that film.
Absolutely.
At that point, any other A-list star would say, let me find the most commercially successful director and let me make the safest film. Why were you convinced that it was okay for you to play this guy who's weeping, who's being bullied? What was going through your head?
I think destiny played out just like in the best way possible for me to learn the right lessons where my profession is concerned, where, you know, my person is concerned. Because I could sense the instability within me while I was performing in these films in which I was playing this hero. And I had a memory of something that centered me when I was doing Kahuna Pyar Hai. I was, you know, pretty centered when I was doing a Mission Kashmir. I was pretty centered when I was doing Fizza. I was centered in all of these.
As an artist.
As an artist, as Hrithik on set, I felt safe. You know, I felt safe. And then when I was doing films like Main Prem Ki Deewani Hoon, all the others which I did, Na Tum Jaano Na Hum, even K3G for that matter, there was something that was unsettled. I couldn't understand why am I not feeling safe. And it hit me when I heard Koi Mil Gaya. When I heard the idea, I felt like home. I felt I'm understanding what I'm about now. You know, I need a DNA match. I need a DNA match. Even if it is 1% or 2%, I need some kind of match with the character that I am. I can't play something that I am not. And I know people say it's acting and you got to act it. But I don't think I'm good at that. You know, I can't act something that I have not been or not felt even like 1% in my life. So I had to, Koi Mil Gaya was that learning. And it didn't matter whether it would, lessen my status as a star. You know, it's not a film that is gonna again hit that bullseye. All of that was exterior worries. I was extremely happy with what was happening inside. You know, I still remember the joy that I felt while brushing my teeth before a day of shoot at a Koi Mil Gaya set. And brushing my teeth and then stopping and saying, damn, I want to feel like this for every single film I ever do in my life again. I want to feel like this. I remember that moment. You know, like just, then I'm brushing my teeth. And I'm like, while brushing my teeth, there's a high. You know, so the process is something that I grabbed with, you know, both my hands and I said, I'm not going to let this go now. This is what I need to feel. This is what I want to feel. And that kind of like sorted me out. I didn't do, that's when I started doing after Koi Mil Gaya, one film at a time. That's the flip. So I had to go through that journey of uncertainty, unsafety, failure, you know, not knowing where am I, and then boom, Koi Mil Gaya happens. I'm at my lowest professionally and feeling amazing inside. And I said, okay, all these films failed, and while I was shooting them, I was feeling unsafe. Now I'm feeling home. Let's see what the outcome of this is. And it hit another bullseye. Yeah. And that was it. I was, you know, I was set. I just knew what I had to do now. Very lucky, very fortunate.
You know, I was looking at old interviews of Rakeshji, right? Mm. He said you found Rohit's posture, his clothes, the way he talked. You constructed what this man-child would be. Yeah. Right? He said you would lock yourself up in a hotel room 2 to 3 days before shoot, and you would just get into character and then stay in that character for most of the shoot. Now, nobody worked like that at the time.
Yeah, and people made me feel so embarrassed about it. You know, I'm so glad that we are more, open now to actors having a process. And because up until then, the ideals in our industry were kind of a little, I don't even know the word, but I was not doing something that, you know, was efforted. I had no other way. I knew the feeling that I wanted to, have inside. And to reach there, I just had to apply this process. I had to be secluded. It was just, I could not lock on to the feeling if I was around people who knew me as Hrithik. It kind of like displaced me. So I locked myself up in a hotel room. I think I was there for 5 days before the shoot began. Just constructing, playing with the Rubik's Cube, I remember. I don't know. I was trying to like see what all would be conducive to kind of like becoming this character, be it props or be it clothes or hair. And I was really enjoying that process. And then on set, for the entire time, I just stayed as Rohit. And it was so much fun. I was delighted because I was surrounded by actors like Preeti and Rekha ji who didn't judge that, you know. And
but you're saying people did?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Up until then, I was quite embarrassed because I don't know how to say this, but I mean, people I admire, respect, would kind of like make fun of the fact that I am so crazy about, you know, method and, you know, pagal ho gaya hai.
Kya zarurat hai?
It's acting. Just go there and say your lines. Act it. It's acting. Like, yeah, but I'm not that good an actor. I need to, you know, do my process. I need to look at it far more times. And so, but now I'm really glad that people actually also, like, you know, thanks to you have something known as masterclass, where you come, people sit and talk about their art, and, you know, without judgment. It is so nice that people are, you know, now actually understanding that you know, it's not about playing a hero. It's not about just having the confidence and the swag. There is another hero. There is another actor. You know, there's another process which is also delightful. It's a learning. It's education. It's schooling. You know, it's unlearning. It's all of that, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, and I hope you know, students of cinema take that in and kind of like, you know, enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's a great profession because of that.
Right.
You know, it's not a great profession because of, oh, look at the accolades and look at the star status. That's not going to be your life. That's going to be a week in your life, you know, when the film releases, or, you know, you're traveling, you get to be at the airport and people look at you, you know, that's when you get to enjoy that side of it. But the process by itself, so much fun, you know. And today on set, I see so many actors applying process and applying themselves, applying their minds, you know, asking about motivations and why are we saying this line, can I do it like that. It's so much nicer. But at Koi Mil Gaya time, it wasn't there, you know. It didn't exist.
Tell me, where did you pick up these things? Because, you know, as I watch, I was also seeing there's so many just lovely small things, right? Like the expression you have on your face when the Kasauli Tigers are winning and she's cheering for Raj, and you're just looking confused and hurt.
Yeah.
And then you have this, you know, when you're dancing to It's Magic, there's this look of just abandon joy. Like, how did you construct? Where did you take it from?
I think I must say that I was also very lucky, because I had lived a childhood that had instances where that I could take from, you know.
So you mind your own childhood?
I experienced, you know, being bullied. I experienced having a stutter, which was a handicap and was made fun of, and people laughed. And so I understood. I had information about that, you know. I had emotional intelligence about that, so I could apply that, you know. It was I was fortunate. I knew I had the heart. I knew I had the heart of Rohit, so half the battle was won. Then came in the craft, and I said, okay, how is he going to talk? How is he going to walk? And I started, of course, I always start with the hair. You know, once I get the look right. And I think Rohit was just there in me. You know, a part of me didn't ever grow up. A part of me, you know, the traumatized part of me, I think, remained a child, remained that vulnerable. That's the part that I usually go to when I have to be emotional. It's that part that gets activated. So, but seeing that in a positive way, when you connect the dots, the things that you go through, they will all become your resource at some point. And that's what happened with me. But yeah, for the voice, I found Rohit's voice while I was, practicing how he would cry. So when I was making the voice while crying, and strange how I've never mentioned this, but because I've done so many interviews about this, but I remember when I was crying as Rohit, there was a certain voice that came out, and that became a bit of that became Rohit's normal voice. So it came from a cry, and I kind of like took it from there and then tried and rehearsed talking with that same so it's that the vocal cords go lower because it's actually a cry,
right?
But he talks like that, but it doesn't sound like a cry anymore when right. you do it as his.
But there's some
voice.
Anguish in it.
But yeah, so but it came from a cry.
Right.
And I think I must have gone to every single eyewear shop in the world, to find the right glasses for Rohit, and I found it, and it was so bloody expensive.
Where did you find that?
I was shooting for Main Prem Ki Diwani, I think. I was in London, and I was hunting for, the right glasses. I found these glasses, which were like titanium, and it had like a really small rim, and you could see the expressions very open and very clear. And it was for £300. I didn't have the money. And I was like, shit, this is really, really expensive. And it was strange because I was earning. I could have just bought it, but I think the way we were brought up, £300 was like, you can't have spend that kind of
on eyeglasses.
Money on eyeglasses,
yeah.
Because it's for a character, and you can just buy something from here. So I actually took permission from my dad. I said, this is for Rohit and I want to buy these glasses, £300. So, I mean, at that time, £300 would be like what, maybe £600 today. I found those glasses. But I really, juiced that glass out completely because I wore the same glasses as Rohit. And I had bought these for Raj and Koya in Kahona Pyar.
Kahona Pyar, that's what I was going to say, right?
I bought them for Raj and Koya in Kahona Pyar Hai.
And then juiced it for Rohit.
Yeah, sorry, I got the story a little wrong. So I got the glasses for Kahona Pyar Hai. They were £300. I didn't have the money because I was not earning.
Correct.
That makes sense.
Correct.
And then I juiced it out because it fit in Koi Mil Gaya. That's the story, yeah. I got a little confused. Sorry about that.
That's fab.
Yeah. So I got my glasses, I got my voice, I got my
ho
hair. Paise vasool ho gaye. And the rest was body
and
language
the
and stuff. So the Haila was, I think, something that came from my dad. It was written. And I just had to find a way to, express that, what the hell, whoa. And that was pretty easy.
That wasn't hard.
The Haila came pretty easy. But it was an incredible process. I had asked Dad that, hey, shall we do like a screen test where, you see what I'm doing and wearing and stuff like that. He said, no, we'll do straight on set.
So he trusted you completely.
Yeah, completely. And that kind of was a unsaid faith that he instilled in me that, hey, do what you think is right. I trust you. And I think that really empowered me because him not being worried about, okay, I want to know what you're doing, what you're saying, how you're going to talk, how you're going to look. He didn't see anything until I came as Rohit on set and gave that shot. He had no idea what I was going to wear, what I was going to look like.
What
nothing.
Was the first shot?
The first shot of Koi Mil Gaya was Rohit was in his school uniform. And it's the scene where he sticks a sorry note
with the chewing gum.
With the chewing gum. That was the first scene that we did. My dad had no idea I was going to wear or what I was going to do. But things just fell in place. Thank God they did. I was nervous. I was very nervous. Very nervous.
You know what also blew my mind is that you bring in Jadu into the film at 1 hour 19 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, this is your trump card. And for most of the first half, he's not there.
Yeah, but that is Dad. Dad was so certain when we were scripting the film. He said that my film should be either working or not working, with or without Jadu. As in, like, if before Jadu comes in, if the film has not gripped you completely and you're not with the film, then Jadu coming in will not do anything. He was absolutely certain on that. Is that we need to create a need for something superb to come in because we want to help Rohit.
Yeah.
You know, if the audience is with Rohit, then Jadu can come as a cardboard box and it would still work. That was his belief, and that is something that I've applied to every film I've done in my life. You know, if you have something fantastic in the film, then something needs to warrant it. Something in the film, the character, some identification needs to, create a space for it. Mm. Once you create the space for it on the screen and in the hearts of the audience, then as soon as that fantastic thing comes and fills it up, you will feel great. And then there's no looking back. Then it's a success all the way. So the challenge was the portion of the film before Jadu came in. And I think hearing my dad say these lines made me understand indirectly that the responsibility of the film lies with Rohit.
Yeah.
You know, you cannot rely on Jadu.
Yeah.
You cannot rely on that. That is something that will come and only help. But it's not going to make the film.
Yeah, because if you don't love Rohit, then it's over.
Then it's over. It's completely over.
Yeah.
And that's what he has applied to all his films. He really looks at, you know, the broad strokes, you know, the kahani and But, you know, I really feel commercial Hindi cinema coming from where it is coming and going towards where it is going now is really, you know, it's a skill set. It's a different kind of skill set.
It is.
You know, there is the cinema, the big cinema that caters to, you know, and fills all these specific tanks, and it's community experience. And that's, I think, what explains it all, that it's a community experience. You know, when you're watching a film in the theater, and if the film makes you want to share your highs and your excitement with the people that you're with, you know, or even like subconsciously know that we're all going through the same thing. It's like a ride that you're all in together. That's another high. It's another high. It's a specific skill set that you need to produce to make such films. Then of course there's the other kind that you ingest, you can take in one-on-one, you know, it's just you and the movie, and it speaks to you directly, you know, one-on-one. And that's another kind of
cinema.
It's
another pleasure.
It's another pleasure.
Absolutely.
And then I believe there is a sweet spot. That is what I am after.
Between
these two. And I think it exists. But to create that, you need somebody who, you know, is from that world where you understand that skill set, because that's an old school skill set. So belief in that.
And not many people have it anymore.
Not many people have it, which I think is a little sad, because it is not bad or old. It is a skill set. It can be applied. So learn that. Know this, and then find your sweet spot, you know, find that mix. That's what I'm after. That's it. I'm really just after that.
No, he said that in this interview that I was reading, Rakesh ji said that shooting with Jadu was really hard.
Oh,
because he was remote controlled.
Traumatic, yeah.
Yeah, and to connect, like to kind of make it all go in line, like the eyes, the hands, yeah. the lips. What was it about? Like, what was that like?
It was just difficult. And it, which is why, you know, one of the reason that I had to stay in character, because all of these things can just throw you off.
Yeah.
You know, everything was on remote control. And so if Jadu turns like that and has to look at me, he has to aim. The animatronic guy needs to aim the eyeballs where I am. Because if the camera is behind you, you can tell if I'm looking at you or there while talking to you. So the head turn, the eyeball, you know, making it all like, and of course we were working with budgets which didn't allow us, you know, heavy machinery. It was a process of repetition again and again and again and again. And I had to sustain that emotion for all those takes. But it all ended well.
Speaking of endings, I was fascinated to learn that there were actually two endings.
Yeah.
There was a happy ending.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember.
And then, which is what is in the film.
Yeah.
But there was a sad ending
yeah.
where Jadu doesn't give Rohit the powers.
Yeah.
And I read that your father took it to like, he showed Subhashji, he showed Karan, he showed Adi and Yashji and got opinions and that Yashji liked the sad ending.
Yeah.
Because he thought that was bittersweet.
Yeah.
But Adi was adamant, it has to be happy.
Absolutely. So, Yash uncle actually, I think, recognized the sweet spot that I'm talking about. You have a commercial skill set film and your ending is just that it's over, you know, he's gone back. And you live with that bittersweet feeling. I also loved that. I loved it. And then Adi came in and said that, no, the people have to go back with the high. They have to go back with the high. And that was also absolutely true, you know, as I said, for a community experience. And that's what he was looking at, you know, the community experience, the vibration inside the theater, not as a film on a TV screen that you're watching and ingesting on your own, but the euphoria inside a theater where the entire community is, you know, the film is bringing them all together. So in the end of the film, if you don't thread the needle and get them all at that juncture and go boom, it'll be a little, you know, they don't leave them wanting. Not in this film. Don't leave them wanting. And then I got a brainwave. I said, let's live as much as we can with the fact that he's gone. So we had a scene where you actually start thinking that, oh, it's over. And it's over. It's gone. And then in the scene after that, when they're walking home, you're still absorbing the truth that, oh my God, it's over. And something happens and, you know, he discovers that Jadu has found a way to send the powers back. And so we got both. And so I was delighted because I got to play both the emotions.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. I was just thinking, imagine a time when a director takes this massive, very ambitious film, gets feedback, asks his peers.
That's amazing.
It's amazing.
Absolutely amazing.
I don't know. Ritik, could that happen today? I don't know.
You know, that's something that I have learned from my dad. He is extremely, extremely secure.
Yeah.
Extremely secure. He would, at a time like a Krish 3, for instance, he'd call my friends, my colleagues, he would call Farhan and narrate the whole film to him and ask him his opinion. Adi. So there's something in him that is so solid. All he is looking for is, I want to know, I just want to get information. It's not going to break me if you don't like the film. In fact, there was a time where we were making, in fact, my first film, Kaho Na Pyar Hai. So I won't name who it was now, but, you know, someone told my dad that you should not make this film because, you know, whatever reasons, this should not be the first they should not be the first.
And I can't even believe
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I kind of also, at a certain point, I kind of agreed a little bit.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I
this
did.
Is pre-shooting.
Pre everything.
Huh.
We just script had the, we just had the script. The entire journey of the script. And the meeting ended, and my dad, after the meeting, got even a little bit more convinced that this is the kind of film that speaks to him, yeah. and that he was going to make this film. So he's very solid inside. He just knows. When he knows, he knows. So when he speaks to you know, his colleagues or my friends for feedback, that's all he's doing. He's just getting feedback. He wants to just hear what you're saying. You know, it'll either, in if it's good, it'll empower him. If it is bad, it'll empower him. He learns something. So it's a great quality to have.
It is.
Great quality to have.
And not many people have it.
I agree. I agree.
You know?
Yeah, but that it's just a matter of how secure you are as
yeah.
a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as a filmmaker. Yeah.
You said that you felt hollow when Rohit was done.
Oh yeah.
Why did you feel hollow?
I can feel it right now. It just took me back in a flash. Why? I don't know why. This is, I mean, I think it was a reliving my childhood to be able to connect with that part of me. You know, it's like I don't know if you've ever done this. There are some like in psychology, or if you ever done like some kind of session in therapy and stuff. They actually make you meet your child self, and it tears you up, you know. It really does something to you. And for me, that entire film was that. I was meeting my child, you know, my childhood, throughout that film, and constantly speaking to that part of me, saying that, hey, you know, you're okay, and giving him a chance to kind of like
blossom.
Mm-hmm. So when the film got over, I just felt like, gosh, you know, I'm letting that part of me go again. I'm never going to, you know, live it again. But I realized when I lived, like very recently now, it's been 20 years, but you don't really have to let go of that part. You know, it can always be there. You just have to stay connected
yeah.
to it. But yeah, I do remember feeling completely hollow. I remember doing a performance as Rohit in one of the award functions, and I lost my glasses, and I just couldn't go home. I just could not go home. So I waited till the entire function was over, and I came back in my suit. I was waiting in the van. I came back in the suit, and I went, you know, under the stage, just like under the stage, because that's, I thought, where maybe it's dropped through the hydraulic. When I was coming up, maybe it, you know, or it slipped and it fell or whatever. And I was hunting for those glasses for 1 hour. I just didn't
Did
stop.
Did you find them?
I found them.
Wow.
I found them. I stayed there for 1 hour. My entire staff was hunting in the, you know, in all the kachra, the wires, the grass, because under the stage it was a ground. And there was a lot of, you know, things there. It was impossible. It was like a needle in a haystack. But I found it. Then I went home. Crazy, but sweet. Yeah.
You know, Ritik, I was thinking even today, I don't know how many actors would take on this role. Right? It's a very, and like you said, it's a very fine line.
Yeah.
That you could just go over. Tell me, from that time, in these 20 years, how much have your acting instincts evolved? You said to me, I think around Kabul, that, you know, you always would work like there was a dog chasing you.
Yeah.
And you had to outrun this dog.
Yeah.
But with Kabul, you let go of that dog.
Yeah.
And you found your sort of abandon as an artist.
Yeah.
Where are you today?
So, yeah, I think what you said sounds very true to me even now, that Kabul was the beginning of, you know, the emergence of that love for what I do, and that becoming the driving force. And I think with Vedha, I really kind of like felt like I achieved it.
You were fantastic. Oh,
thank you.
It was one of my favorite performances of last time. Thank you. Just fab.
That's amazing. Thank you. But it's more amazing for me because I really was my calmest self. I was really enjoying it. I led the wrongs, you know, I headed for the wrongs, and then it didn't look wrong, and everything just was, I found a flow, and that's what I was looking for. And I think with Vedha, I kind of nailed it. When I say nailed it, I don't mean as a performance, but as what I was striving to achieve, the calm, just being composed in front of the camera. Because I am, so Veda is about transcendence, right? He has all the pain inside him and all the trauma, the death of his brother, all of that. And he transcends all of that and has this look of, you know, being completely relaxed, and he has this smile on his face. So the transcendence is something that I refer to as my madness. That's the madness that I love in movies. I love playing that madness. It's actually transcendence. I like characters that can transcend the first instincts, you know, and the second instincts, and the third, and the fourth. Just keep transcending.
Keep rising.
You know? Keep rising, and just keep sitting. Just keep being there. I love those characters. I do not like characters that are driven by their first instincts, who are reactive, and so I understand transcendence because I've played the madness in a lot of my films, but my transcendence is at a vibration that's a little hyper. You know, I can transcend, and you'll see like a shiver. Yeah. All of that was my transcendence.
Yeah, yeah.
But Veda's transcendence was really, really calm and
zen-like,
and that for me was a personal victory. And it also taught me a lot of things. It took me to meditation. I could sit for an hour plus.
Really?
Yeah, an hour plus and just sit in stillness and not want to come out of it because I started enjoying it so much. So I love how, you know, being an actor can take you so many places and teach you so many things via the characters.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
I learned that through Veda, which was very, very nice.
Well, yeah. He's fantastic. But Hrithik, you did say that because the film didn't work so well, you said that maybe my fans don't want me to play a role like this, right?
Yeah.
Maybe they're not open to you being that
maybe.
Bad. But
maybe.
But then, Hrithik, my question is then, does the superstardom, does the success actually kind of become a sort of a Lakshman Rekha? You know, does it become a place like, I mean, would you do Rohit today?
So yeah, after Vedha, after the film didn't do well, it struck me that maybe, you know, there is, this is dangerous ground. I can't repeatedly do films that don't cater. And I was surprised that I was thinking like this because up until then, it had never occurred to me that...
You've never catered.
Yeah.
I mean, Guzarish was not catering to who?
Yeah.
To no one.
But, yeah, I don't know. There is no way to, you know, think through this. We can't think through this. We don't really know what the truth is. But I do, yes, I am aware that this thought has crossed my mind. Should I, you know, save a window for films like this, but continue to make sure that I do the kind of films that does get me a box office? Because no matter what you say, you know, when you say what's more important, box office or acclaim, it is box office.
Of course.
It is the biggest acclaim is box office.
Yeah.
That is when and how you know, you know, how many people in the world you've contributed to as a community. having said that, you know, now that Vikram Veda has released on OTT, I have gotten amazing feedback from so many people who said, "Arey yaar, we should have watched this in the theater." So I wonder what we missed, whether at all we missed something, or maybe it was just not a community experience film. So a lot of things to just learn. You can't learn all the lessons, but they're good things to ponder while you continue to, you know, do the job at hand. But yeah, I am a little confused. I'd say that, yeah.
But would you do a Rohit today?
I would do it very differently, but I would do it.
Right, but you take the risk
of
this film
involved. I would take the risk.
Exactly.
I would take the risk.
So you're still the same guy.
Yeah, but now I will have to take the risk knowing that a lot more is at stake.
Sure.
So I'm going to be aware of a lot. I'm going to be aware of the fact that I've experienced what it feels like for a film not to do well at the box office. And it's a recent, it's a recent failure. Which is why, you know, it's fresh and I can use it, you know, to make my decisions now. But you're right. If something speaks to my heart, there's no way I can say no.
If there's a DNA match.
It's a DNA match. You know, it pulls at my heartstrings. You just go ahead and do it. You know, the artist always triumphs.
That's, you know, wonderful.
Yeah,
and I hope he always will.
I know I will, yes. But thank you, yes.
Last question. Koi Mil Gaya led to Krish, 2006. Krish 3, 2013. 10 years have passed. Where is Krish 4?
Well, it's... What shall I say? It's right where it needs to be. I'm extremely excited. It is something that I don't know how it's going to be made, because it's seeming like you need like some 10 hands to, like, you know, put it all together. But every day it's just growing bigger.
In terms of ambition?
In terms of, yeah. So, yeah, I should have answered in another way, because now it's taking me back to the, oh my God, how are we going to do this place? But I'm very excited, and it is happening. And soon we will you know, manifest and get what we need to make this film go on floors.
Amazing. Cannot wait to see you in that black leather jacket. All over again. Thank you so much, Ritik. This was lovely.
Thank you. Absolute pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Film Companion podcast. Stay tuned for more reviews, interviews, and all that's hot and happening in pop culture and entertainment.